And so we're going to talk about uncommon forgiveness today by a man named Jacob. We're going to be in Genesis chapter 32 in a few minutes. We're not going to be there yet because we've got to understand this story, because Genesis 32 is the answer to the story. What I love about the Old Testament that you don't get in the New Testament, because the New Testament is written over a very short period of time. The Old Testament is written over centuries. So you get the whole story of a lot of people. Not everybody in the Old Testament do you get the whole story, but Jacob is one of those. We meet him at his birth, and we leave him at his death. So we know about Jacob, and the scriptures give chapter after chapter after chapter after chapter on Jacob. If you want to know somebody's life, Jacob is a great one to study, to understand, because the whole story of his life is there from the birth to the end. Now, I'm going to give a little introduction about his birth and his early life, and then we're going to talk about when he and God have an encounter. And you must remember this, the story that I give you, he is in his 40s when he has the encounter. He already has 12 of his 13 children at this time. But let's begin at the beginning. Jacob is the grandson of Abraham. Last week we talked about Abraham and his faith. Abraham had a son named Isaac. Isaac had a wife named Rebekah. They had two children, twins, Jacob and Esau. Esau came out first, Jacob came out second. There was a fight in the birth canal even, and these two boys fought their entire life. Esau was a man of outdoors. He was hairy, he was big, he was burly. Jacob was smooth, he was more the indoor type, not that they had buildings, but they had tents. He kind of stayed around Rebekah, favorite of mom. That was a big sin. Mom had a favorite, Jacob. Dad had a favorite, Esau. And everybody knew whose everybody's favorite was. Well, as they grew older, Jacob, and you can read all this in the Bible. It's in from Genesis 26 through Genesis 32. Read it when you get home. Jacob is home making dinner. He's making stew, and he's making it. Esau's been out working in the fields probably for days. He comes in, he's famished, and he's just hungry. And he says, "Feed me." Now, this is one brother telling the other brother, "Feed me." And Jacob says, "I'm not going to feed you until you sell me your birthright." You see, back then, the older children had certain rights greater than the younger, even though it was only a few minutes between the time that Esau was born and Jacob was born. Esau was still the firstborn, and there were certain rights. And Jacob said, "If you want to eat this food, you got to sell me your rights." Esau could care less. Esau was a man of the outdoors. He wasn't really given much to anything. And so he said, "I'll sell you my rights. Give me the food." And he takes the food and he eats it. And once he was full, he realized he had made a mistake, that he shouldn't have sold his birthright. This is what we talked about in life groups today. But he hated his brother. Before, there was sibling rivalry. Now it turned into pure old-fashioned hatred. Esau hated Jacob. We fast forward a few more years, and Isaac, the elder father, is now about to die. And so Isaac brings in Esau and says, "Go out, catch some game, bring it back, and prepare it the way you know I like to prepare it. Grill it the certain way, etc. And then come in, I'll eat this dinner, and then I will bless you before I die." He was going to die in a few weeks, and so he thought, and so he wanted to bless his son. He was blind, his hearing had gone, but he loved the foods of the game outdoors. Well, Rebecca hears this. Off goes Esau to hunt the deer or the antelope or whatever he was catching, and he was going to bring it back. He's off. Rebecca heard this. She goes to Jacob. You know the story. She goes, "Jacob, Dad's going to bless Esau, but I want him to bless you. So you're going to go in. I'm going to prepare all his favorite foods because I have some food here. I'm going to prepare it, and you're going to go in." And Jacob says, "No, I can't go in because I'm smooth. I have a high-pitched voice, and even with my dad's hearing going and his sight going, he's going to know that it's not me. I mean, that it's not Esau, but it's me." She goes, "I've got it covered, Jacob. I'm going to put you in Esau's clothing so you'll smell like him. I'm going to prepare the foods that he is going to prepare, so all these aromas are going to come, and then I'm going to put skins on the exposed part of your hand, the exposed part of your neck. Let's go give it a shot. So she prepares the foods. Jacob takes it in. So Rebecca's a deceiver. Now Jacob is a deceiver. He's coming in, and he goes, "Father," and Isaac goes, "Who is this?" And Jacob goes, "It's your son Esau." Now that wasn't even a deceit. That's an out-and-out lie, isn't it? "Your son Esau is here with the prepared foods." So he comes in, he goes, "You don't sound like my son Esau. Come closer. But you smell like him." Smell the robe. And he said, "Give me your hand." And he felt the fur. I mean, you know, he was an older man, so he thought the skins were the skin of Esau. He felt the neck. He goes, "Yes, my son." So he eats the meal. And then he blesses Jacob with an incredible blessing. Jacob's like, "Come on, give me the blessing." Gets the blessing, and he takes off. Right at that time, Esau comes in from the hunt. It's a great story. Esau comes in from the hunt, prepares the food, takes it in to his father, and goes, "Father, I am here." And Isaac says, "Who are you?" He says, "I am Esau." He goes, "I just blessed you." And then they both realize the ruse, that Esau had been between the mother Rebecca and Jacob, and it had all gone wrong. So he begged his father, "Bless me." And his father would not bless him with the same blessing. He said, "I've already given my blessing." So he blessed him with this blessing that said, "You shall be the servant of Jacob the rest of your life." The blessing wasn't a blessing. It was kind of a secondhand blessing. And Esau now screams out, "He has stolen my birthright. Now he has stolen my blessing." And under his breath, he said, "And I'm going to kill him." He didn't want his dad to hear that part. He was going to wait till his dad died in a week or two, and then he was going to kill his brother. Well, Rebecca, who's standing and watching all this at the curve of the tent or somewhere, goes to Jacob and says, "Jacob, you're going to get killed here in a few weeks. Why don't you go up to my brother, Laban, who is in the north where she came from, and go live with him and marry one of his daughters?" Jacob thought this was a good idea. And so they go to Isaac and say, "Dad, I don't want to marry one of these Hittite women, another deceit. I want to marry one of your nieces, another deceit." But he goes, "So will you let me go?" Isaac lets him go. So Esau did not kill him because Isaac died a little later. So Jacob is now hundreds of miles north in a land where Laban, the brother of Rebekah, so his uncle, he meets him there and meets this beautiful girl. Do you remember her name?
Rachel.
Rachel. We name our children Rachel. Beautiful woman named Rachel, who was the second daughter of Laban. He meets her. He works for Laban for 30 days. And Laban goes, "I can't have you work for free. What do you want? What are your wages?" He goes, "I want her. I want to marry Rachel." And he goes, "Well, not yet." And he goes, "I'll work for 7 years if you let me marry her." He goes, "You got a deal." And so Jacob works for 7 years for Rachel. The day of the wedding comes. It's actually not a day. In America, it's a day. Back then, it was a week-long wedding ceremony. They did the wedding. They had the wedding night. Then they had celebrations. Everybody came in. It was a week-long. Now, one thing you need to understand is that today, when many times brides come in, they're wearing veils. But you notice the veils of today, you can see through the veils, can't you? Want to see the beautiful hair, the beautiful face, the features of the bride. You see all that with today's veils. The veils back then were dark, and you couldn't see in them. So they got married. The veil was black. And so they did the whole ceremony, the whole dinner. They go into the tent, the marriage tent. And understand this also, they don't have a lot of ambient light back then. So it was dark. And when it was dark, it was real dark because there's no light. And he consummates the marriage all night long, wakes up and realizes that it wasn't Rachel in the bed with him. It was her sister, Leah. Jacob had met his match. the deceiver Jacob had met a bigger deceiver, his uncle, now father-in-law, Laban. He comes out, screams to his father-in-law, "What have you done?" And you remember, Laban goes, "No, no, 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 no. In our country, the firstborn has to be married first, and then we marry the second. So finish the week out, and then we'll have another marriage ceremony next week, if you will work for me for 7 more years. Jacob has met his match. Fantastic. Laban, Jacob, deceiver, great deceivers, back and forth. So he agrees to it. So he's married to Leah, and he's married to Rachel, not 7 years later, as many people think. It was the next week. And it took 14 years to do all this. 7 years, marriage, marriage, 7 years. Now, in those 7 next years, he's married to 2 women. Leah starts having kids. She has 4 sons right away: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. So those are names we recognize as the tribes of Israel. She gets those 4. Rachel has none. So Rachel goes, "Okay, I got to have some children. I'm not having any." She sends her servant in, and he has 2 more children, boys, out of her. Now, Leah's womb is shut. The sibling rivalry between Leah and Rachel is fierce, like it was with Jacob and Esau back in the Promised Land. And so Leah's having no more children. There's 6 boys, right? 4 from Leah, 2 from the servant girl. So Leah sends in her servant girl in. So he has 2 more sons. I mean, you can't keep it together. Asher, Issachar, Gad, Dan, Naphtali, they're all having kids. But Rachel had none. So there's 4 from Leah. There's 2 from Rachel's servant. There's 2 from Leah's servant, all boys. Now Leah's womb opens again, and she has another son and a daughter named Dinah. So there's 10 boys and 1 girl, Dinah. Then finally, Rachel has a child. Do you remember his name? Joseph. Joseph is a great story. We're not going to talk about Joseph in this study, but a fantastic story. Joseph is born. So now there's 11 boys and 1 girl. And Jacob goes to Laban sometime in this, I don't think right then, earlier on. He goes, "You know, I'm getting too big. You're too big. We've got to start doing something. Why don't we separate our herds?" They were shepherds. And so Jacob goes, "This is what I'm going to do. I will only take the bad sheep, the bad lambs, the bad rams, the bad goats. I'll take all of them, take them over here, and you keep all the good ones, and I'll still manage your good ones, and I'll take care of mine and get them to grow. It'll be a lesser herd." Well, they start deceiving each other. If you read the story, they're deceiving each other the whole time. So Laban takes his best ones away and even his worst ones, so they really only gets the bad, bad ones, and all this stuff is going on for years, 6 more years. So now it's 20 years that they've been deceiving each other. And finally, Jacob says, "I'm going to leave." God calls him in a dream and says, "It's time to go back to the Promised Land." Now, let me stop the story there. Jacob was the grandson of one of the greatest men who ever lived, Abraham. He was the son of one of the greatest men who ever lived. There is only 2 times to this point, Jacob is about 40, that we have ever heard Jacob pray. He never built an altar, he never worshiped, and he only prayed, I think, 2 times in those 40 years. Both of them were prayers based out of fear. Like, "My brother's chasing me. Will you protect me?" Those kind of prayers. Foxhole prayers, prayers based out of fear. And there was one prayer earlier on where God even gave him a vision of angels coming. Remember Jacob's ladder coming back and forth, and heaven opened up and the angels came down. I mean, God is reaching into Jacob's life. And at the end of that, Jacob says, "God, this is amazing. I will give you 10% of all that I have." Now, that was a really, I don't want to use this word, so I'll use another word. That was really a foolish thing to do. Jacob had nothing to begin with anyway. He was just had his backpack with him of whatever. And he says, "I'll give you 10% of everything I have and everything you give me." There's no record of Jacob ever giving anything to God. It was his way of just saying, get me out of this and I'll do anything. Have you ever done that? Get me out of this, Lord, and I'll just do anything. And he even verbalized what he would do, and he never did it. And he never prays again, at least it's not recorded in Scripture, and Scripture usually records the prayers of its people, never prayed again for 20 years. 20 years. So this is not, you know, he's just there deceiving back and forth with Laban the whole time until God gets a hold of his life. God calls him and says, come back to the promised land. So they come back. But he has to do a little more deceiving to make it work, right? So he waits till Laban is 3 days away shearing the sheep out in the pasture, 3 days the other way. He takes his entourage. Now, they can't go fast. They got 11 or 12 now kids. They have thousands of animals. I'll tell you why we know it's thousands of animals. Thousands. All the people surrounding that, how fast can you go when you got thousands of animals with you? So you're going at a snail's pace heading south. Laban's north. Laban comes back a few days later, so he finds out they're gone. So Laban takes a group of men and chases them. And they're going to have it out because Laban realizes that his meal ticket just left. And all his children just left. All his grandchildren just left. He has a few sons, but they all left. So he chases them down. The night before he gets to them, he has a dream. And in that dream, God says, don't you touch Jacob. So he goes the next day. He goes, Jacob, I could kill you, but your God told me I can't touch you. It's incredible. And so they deceive each other even there. Rachel stole some of his gods. Remember that part? Rachel stole the gods. The gods were these little things that they would put on their mantles or in different corners. They're only about this big. Different gods of bulls and oxen and things. You can see them. They're in museums nowadays. They're there. She hid them and she said, Dad, I didn't take them. So she's stealing. She's deceiving. They're deceiving each other, but he lets them go and comes down south with all these people. Now, one last problem, and we'll get to the story in the Bible on chapter 32. Jacob has to meet Esau, who 20 years before stole his birthright and stole the blessing, and he hasn't seen him since. Can we pick up the story? Chapter 32. So that's a long start. Verse 22. Jacob realizes that Esau is coming to meet him. And Jacob's front men went down and heard that Jacob had 400 men with him. See, this is how big, these are entourages. Don't think it's just Jacob and Esau. I mean, this is a huge entourage of Jacob, a huge entourage of Esau, and Jacob doesn't have army men. He has a few herdsmen, but he is afraid that Esau is going to capture him and kill him. Why bring 400 people and then steal all his, you know, and steal his wives and all the things? So there's a fear there. And this is what Jacob does before we get to here. You have to read it in the previous verses. This is how we know he had thousands of animals. He takes 550 animals, goats, rams, sheep, camels, oxen, their children. I'm not a farm guy. I don't know what the babies of these things are called, but whatever they're called, sorry. Whatever they're called, baby camels and baby bulls and baby rams and all these things. Someone's going to come up and give me the exact name afterwards. But he puts them all, and this is what he does. The guy's smart. Deceivers are smart. He says, I'm going to put the goats up first with a few men, and then when we meet Esau tomorrow, just the goats and the few men are going to go forward. So if he's about to capture me, he's going to go, where's Jacob? And they're going, here's a gift of goats. And then behind him, maybe a half a mile, it's going to come the rams. And there are about 50 rams going to come up with a bunch of his men. And this is what he's thinking. Esau's going to go, where's Jacob? Oh, this is a gift from Jacob. 50 rams, and then the 30 camels are going to come up. And then, where's Jacob? I want to kill him. Oh, here's a gift from Jacob. And there was going to be 8 sets of gifts. It would have taken all day for this to happen. because it takes a while for everybody, you know, all these things. So by the time he had hoped he would diffuse the hatred of Esau for him. So he has it all set. This is about to happen. Then he goes, okay, if he kills any of my family, I want him to kill my two servant wives first. Go figure. This is not a man who is standing at the front of his family. So he puts his two servant wives first. Then he puts Leah, the actual wife who he likes least, next. And then there's Rachel and Joseph. Then there's him. Miles long of all this going on, and he's in the back by himself. Now, is that a man of fear or not? I gotta tell you, it's funny, but it's not funny. A few years ago during the hurricanes, remember we had those three hurricanes back to back? Well, we live in a place where we had to leave our house. And so I had a four-wheel drive, so we stayed at a friend's house out west. I don't know what 2 miles does different when a hurricane's here, but they tell you stay out west, west of I-95. So we stay west of I-95. We're in the eye of the hurricane. I'm thinking, I gotta go find out what my house is doing. A little nervous. So another guy, we had like 20 people staying at this house. We're all in there. And so my mom and dad, you know, it was my mom's 80-something birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Mom. She goes, I want to go too. So I go, okay, my mom is just an adventure hound. My dad says he wants to go. And so the host's home had a young son, and he goes, I want to go too. So I said, okay. Is it okay, Dad, that your son goes in the hurricane? Kind of said yes. So we go, and then, you know, we get out there, and we go, well, we got to find out if this friend's house is okay and that friend's house is okay. Well, the hurricane is, we're out of the eye by this point, and we're back in the hurricane. So we get a cell phone call. Where is my son? He doesn't ask for me. He doesn't ask for my mom. Where is my son? So I thought, we're in big trouble. So I get back to the house, and this, I did exactly what this verse has said. So I said, you know what? I'm going to send my mom out first. And then I'm going to send my dad out next. So by the time, and then the boy came last. I even went for, so it does work. It calms the people down. The boy's now a doctor. He survived. So there's Jacob by himself. He has sent everybody ahead, all ready for this predetermined thing that's going to happen tomorrow. Verse 22 of chapter 32. That same night, he arose and took his two wives, his two servants, female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and everything else that he had, that whole scenario that I told you about just a moment ago. And then Jacob was left alone. He actually went back over the stream, so he even had a stream between him and his brother. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for the day has broken. But Jacob said, I will not let you go until you bless me. Jacob knew something was different here. He knew he was with God. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Then he said, back and forth, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. The word Israel means struggled or striven with God. It's a great name. Then Jacob said to him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask me my name? And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel. Underline that. Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face. Underline those words. For I have seen God face to face. And yet my life has been delivered. The sun rose upon him as he passed. Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. Two incredible things here. first of all, Israel. His name is now called Israel. God had gotten a hold of him that night. Israel. Isn't that amazing? Throughout the Bible, the people who lived in the promised land were called Israelites. Today, people who live in that same land are called what? Israelis. Israel. The name Israel is well known around the world because this man, Jacob, no longer became a deceiver, although he did deceive one more time, I think out of habit, but became a follower of God. And what did he call that place? Peniel. And what does that mean? I have seen, let me just say it exactly, I have seen God face to face. Now, this is a very hard concept, but let me try to speak it and explain it. He didn't just say, I saw God's face. He said, I saw God face to face. In other words, he had a face in which to see God as well. Now, go back to the marriage of Leah. Leah had a veil on, didn't she? Go back to the deception of Isaac when Jacob had on Esau's veil, his robe, his hand, the skins. You see, many people live with a veil over their face, just like this. And when they look at God, they see God through the veil. If you have fear, if you have doubt, you see God through fear and doubt. If you have pride, you see God through pride. If you have arrogance, you see God through arrogance. Whatever your sin is, you see God through that veil. And that night, that man, whether he was an angel of the Lord or God himself or Christ incarnate, I don't know, but he stripped the veil off. And when he stripped it off, I believe what occurred there, because we hear it in Hebrews chapter 11, by faith, Jacob, by faith, that he believed in God. He confessed God. He actually did confess God here. I have seen the Lord face to face. He confessed God. And when he confessed God, the veil fell down. And it was his face looking at God's face. And it was God's face looking at his face. It's a very hard concept to understand. But so many people talk to me and talk to you, and maybe you're one of them, who is looking at God through a veil darkly. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 12 says, we see dimly now through the dark, but someday we shall see God face to face. Because even now we can't totally see him. But understand this, when you believe in Jesus Christ and God through Jesus Christ, the veil is dropped so that you can encounter God face to face. You do not encounter God through me. Oh, I will help you. You encounter God face to face. I can help you. I can point you. I can direct you. Your friends can direct you. Your wife can direct you. Your child or your parents can direct your children. But ultimately, they need to see him face to face. It is not enough that you are the child of Isaac and the grandchild of Abraham. Earlier on, the two times that Jacob prayed, I think they were kind of false prayers, he prayed in the name of Abraham and Isaac, the God of Abraham and Isaac. Later on, when you see Jacob praying, he prays in the name of God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. See, I have to ask you, is God your God, or is God your parents' God, your brother's God, your mentor's God, your teacher's God? See, do you come to God through me like this? No, you don't do that. We're all here to assist and to help. You go to God face to face. And there's this great little book written by C.S. Lewis, one of his lesser-known books called Till We Have Faces. It's a great book. If you love C.S. Lewis, you should read that book, Till We Have Faces. And the whole premise of the book at the end is the princess wants to see God, and God's speaking back, and they're talking and says, you cannot see God face to face until you have a face, till we have faces. It's an incredible concept. I know it's difficult to understand, but there is something blocking you, like Leah's face was blocked. She did not have a face to Jacob. It was Rachel. And Jacob also had it over him, just metaphorically. God is calling us to strip it away. I believe God yanked that veil off of Jacob's eyes so that he could see God face to face. How many of people have come to me and said, I can't see God? You're right. You can't see God. You got a lot of clutter between you and God. And God is calling on us and actually yanking that clutter away. And you know what we like to do? We like to pull it back up. Moses, and when we get to Moses in, soon, we're going to find out he uses another thing, calls it a hard heart. We put things around our heart so that we can't see God. And we go, we can't get into that heart. Can't get in. Well, so the next day occurs. And Jacob lifted up his eyes, verse chapter 33, verse 1, and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and the 400 men with him. So he divided the children, he did his plan, and he put the servants with the children, etc., etc. And then all of a sudden, here comes Esau. He kind of cuts through. He's seen all the goats. He's seen all the camels. He's seen all the cows. He's seen his sheep. He wants to see Jacob, and he comes to Jacob. So Jacob has his children, his wives, all up there, and Esau's kind of working his way through them all, and he sees Jacob, and they hug and they embrace. But Esau ran, verse 4, to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And when Esau lifted up his eyes, saw the women and children, now he kind of sees all this entourage. They all bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew and bowed down. Joseph and Rachel came and bowed down. Esau said, what do you mean by all this company that I met? And Jacob answered, to find favor in the sight of the Lord. I have found favor. Finally, Jacob understood it wasn't his deceit that he got all these things, but it was the Lord. But Esau said in verse 9, I have enough. Why have you given me all these things, all the 550 animals? And Jacob said, no, please, if I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand. Jacob gave him a king's ransom. 550 animals, even today, is a lot of animals. That is an enormous amount of animals. So you know it was probably 10% he gave him. So he probably had 5,000 animals. Verse 10, Jacob said, no, please, if I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand. Underline this, for I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of God, and you have accepted me. It's an incredible picture of Esau forgiving Jacob. And he says, I have seen the face of God through you. What does he mean by that? I have seen you forgive me as God forgave me. It's a beautiful picture. God forgave Jacob last night. Esau forgave Jacob just now. And he said, I have seen the face of God. He says it twice in under 12 hours. I've seen God's face because of his forgiveness. I've seen God's face because of the forgiveness of someone else. It's a beautiful picture. So they finish out their discussions and they hug and kiss and catch up and all the rest. And Esau leaves. Verse 18. And Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. They were in the northern part of the land, came down to the center part of the land on his way from Padam Aram, which is near Haran, and he camped before the city. And from the sons of Hamar, Shechem's father, he bought for 100 pieces of money the piece of land on which he pitched his tent. This is the first time we see Jacob buying anything. Jacob stole everything in his life up to this point. He stole the water, he stole the sheep, he stole the goats, he deceived for everything. And finally, he realizes that he needs to buy something to prove that it's his, and he's not going to steal it anymore. And on that land, he pitched his tent, then he erected an altar and worshiped the Lord and called that altar the God of Israel. El Elohi Israel. The God, El Elohi, the God of Israel. And he called it that. We find out later actually in the New Testament, that he also did something on that, else on that piece of land. He dug a well on that piece of land. And that's the same well that we find in John chapter 4. Remember Jesus went to the well and there was a woman there? Remember the story of the woman at the well? Do you remember what the well was called? Jacob's well. It was the first time he ever built anything. He built a well that he had paid for. It's interesting, that is the only piece until recently that has come out of the patriarchal period. Now they found a few things since. But when I was 11 years old, I saw that well. I saw Jacob's well. Now it's in a place Americans can't go right now, but I saw that well. That is 4,000 years later. That well still exists. It's a beautiful sight to see. Now, whether it's the well or a well next to it or it's been dug and redug, I don't know. But to understand this, that Jacob had an encounter with God, he had an encounter with his brother, and it changed his life. And may I say, it changed history because of it. Now, what do we learn from this? Let me give you four lessons we learned from this. Lesson number one. God initiates the dialogue. If you read this entire story, you realize that God is working in Jacob's life, and Jacob is ignoring it the entire time till he's in his 40s. He's ignoring it. God is coming to Jacob over and over and over again, calling Jacob to himself. But I believe, as we learn more through the Bible, that God initiates dialogue with us. God is calling us through the Holy Spirit to himself. He's calling people, not his people, they're all his people, calling people to himself. The question is, have you put a veil over your face so that you can't hear it? Listen, God is calling you. Number two, this is key. God is not a genie that can be manipulated. If you read this story, you find that Laban is manipulating God and telling stories. Jacob's manipulating God. Jacob's saying this and that. And the whole story is about manipulating God. And God is not able to be manipulated. Understand that. Number three, godly character is more than just words or even deeds. Jacob did a lot of good things. He increased the herds. Laban did a lot of good things. He gave Jacob opportunities. He gave him his wives, even though it was... But that is not... Character is not just words or deeds. Let me give you four things, and I say this all the time, and we're going to talk about it in Church Lead in another week or two. Think of any type of character quality. So forgiveness, grace, trust, the truthfulness, whatever character quality that you think of. And we go, how do I know if you have good character? The only way I know you have good character, at least I can pretend, think I know, is what you do. But see, that may not be good character. The example I like to give is, if you were to give money to a good cause, what do we usually do? We usually put your name on the building, we put your name in the brochure, go, so-and-so gave money to this. You give money to the school's initiative that they have right now, and what do? We clap, thank you for that gift, we put your name in, we congratulate you. And I go, is that a good character? Is that something with good character? The answer is, we don't know. Giving of money does not show that you have good character. It shows that you have money to give and you chose to give it. It does. You could be giving it because you want your ego stroked. You could be nice to someone because you want them to be nice to you. You could be gracious to someone because you want them to be gracious to you. You could be thankful to someone. I don't know, because that is only what I do. There are four parts to character. Let me give them to you real quick. Number one, character and who God is. The character quality has to match God's character. So being generous matches God's character. So that's a good one. Being forgiving matches God's character. Being thankful or having gratitude, that matches God's character. Having love. So you go, okay, that matches. Versus deceit, which does not match God's character. So that alone tells us it's bad character, what they did. But you go, well, I'm going to do good character. Okay, God, we know that because you've read the Bible. But there's a second part, character and what I think. The Bible talks about having a Christian mind, having a mind that is like Christ. How do you think about things? Oh, I think I could get really well off if I give a little here, or I pretend I'm thankful there. I think I could do a lot of things because of that. I could deceive you and think that I'll be better off. So how do you think? It needs to be godly. Then character and who I am. Who I am means your heart. The scripture says in Proverbs that out of the heart comes the abundance of the well of your life. You see, it's out of the heart. So if I have a heart of hatred, but I'm doing nice things, do I have good character? The answer is no, because I have an evil heart. God is calling us to purify our heart, to cleanse our heart from all unrighteousness, so that I haven't even done anything yet. I know what God says. I have a mind that is like Christ. Philippians chapter 2, have this mind which was also in Christ Jesus. He was talking about humility at that point. I have a heart of Christ, and then I do the things of Christ, do the things of God, because I have the heart, the mind, and that's what God has told me to do. That's the difference. Just to do good things means nothing. It means you do good things. That's philanthropy. That's just helping others. That's good, but that doesn't mean you have good character. Laban did some good things. He did not have good character. Jacob did some good things. He did not have good character. Leah did some good things. She did not have good character. You see all the deceit that happened? They did good things, but they did some bad things as well. So truly look at your own character. And is it based on what God says? Are you thinking as He? Do you have the heart of God? And then are you actually doing it? God, head, heart, habits. Then finally, comes down to this. People can see God in us when we act like Him. People can see God in us when we act like Him. There is a purpose for having good character, because when you have good character, people can see God. That's what it said. God came, He saw Him face to face. Esau came. Now, I don't know if Esau was a believer or not, but he certainly had the characteristics of it at that point in time. And he said, I have seen the face of God because I have seen the character of God. The character of God was forgiveness. If you act out the character of God, people will see God in you. Now, you don't take the credit. You give the credit back to God and move people back to God. And people will come to the Lord because of your good character. Talk like a Christian, but act like one too. And if we started acting like Christians around this community, more and more and more people would come to faith in Christ. Not in faith in their neighbor, not in faith of just faith, but in faith of God, in God through His Son, Jesus Christ. And that is the story of forgiveness from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob, and now he is called Israel. Let me close with this. Next week we celebrate the anniversary of the bombing of Tokyo. April 18th, 1942, the Americans bombed Tokyo with Jimmy Doolittle and his raiders. It's an incredible story. If you haven't reread it, it's incredible. What they did was there was all these bombers. They were B-25s. They were called the Billy Mitchell bombers, named after a great uncle of mine. That's true. And they took these bombers off, and they went to Tokyo and bombed Tokyo, but they did not have enough gas to get back. They knew they had to keep going into China. Well, China was half controlled by Chiang Kai-shek, who was pro-American, and half controlled by the Japanese. And they didn't know who controlled what. And a lot of these bombers went down in Japanese-controlled land. And they were held as prisoners of war from 1942 to 1945. One of the men who was held was a man named Jacob. De Chazar. Jacob de Chazar was held. They beat him. They tortured him. They didn't give him food. They killed other people around him. He was about to be executed, but they chose not to. He hated his guards. He hated the Japanese. He hated the Japanese people. He hated everyone. One of his best friends died, and after that, they gave some English books kind of to appease the people, the POWs. They gave him some English books. The only ones they had, somehow they captured the Japanese, and one of them was a Bible. So Jacob de Cesar had nothing to do. He read the Bible, and he read the story of the gospel, the cross of Jesus Christ. And then he read in Romans, it says, if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart and confess and speak, that you'll be saved. Sorry, I didn't say that right, but you know what I mean. And he became a believer. He said, instantly, the veil was dropped. He uses those words. I saw the interview from a few years ago. He died 8 years ago at 95. The veil dropped. He no longer hated his prison guards. He no longer hated the Japanese army. He no longer hated the Japanese people. Well, 3 years later, you know the story. The Allies win. He is liberated, comes back to America, finishes college, and decides to go back to Japan as a missionary. Wow. Goes back to Japan, and he's sharing the Lord. He draws up, so he doesn't speak Japanese at that point. I think he did eventually. He drew a track, which is a little biography, a little five-page folded biography, and handed it everywhere in Japanese. And there was a man who found one. His name was Mitsuo Fuchida. Mitsuo Fuchida was the guy who led the raid on Pearl Harbor December 7, 1941. He was the guy in front. Then a few days later, he led the raid in Hong Kong. And then a few years later, led the raid in Manila. This was the war hero, Mitsuo Fuchida. Now, De Cesar is now a hero, and Mitsuo Fuchida is now no longer a hero. It's 1948, and he almost was put in prison because of, you know, war crimes, and he was stationed in Hiroshima. The day that the bomb came over Hiroshima, he had gone to Tokyo just for the day. He survived. He read that track. He said, this man used to hate everyone, and he read a Bible. He was hating everybody. He said, I'm going to read a Bible. And Mitsuo Fuchida read the Bible, found a Bible in Japanese, read it, and came to the Lord. The two men met, Jacob and Mitsuo. And there they forgave each other. One bombing Pearl Harbor, the other bombing Tokyo, and both as a representative of their countries, hugged and worked together for about 20 years sharing the gospel in Japan. 1976, Fuchida died, and Jacob said it was one of the saddest days of his life because his best friend had died. You see, forgiveness goes deep. Forgiveness goes deep. Jacob of old was forgiven by God and was forgiven by his brother. The Jacob of World War II that I just shared had the forgiveness of God and the veil of hatred dropped. God will forgive you, and the veil of hatred, the veil of fear, whatever veil is on you will drop. You just have to believe in his son, Jesus Christ. Let's pray.